Welcome to the Ether. Today is Monday, May 23rd, 2022. Today on the Ether, Web 3.0, Gaming, and NFT's Future, hosted by SuperTerra with Money Shots NFTs. Let's take a listen.
I'm just waiting for Simon to join us. Welcome to the latest of the regular weekly Monday/Tuesday spaces, depending where you are in the world. Early Tuesday, where Simon's based, and evening Monday for me. Today's subject is going to be talking about really the future of Web3 and the growing sort of crossover between gaming and the NFT space. We've got some really good input and speakers coming up shortly. So as I say, we'll just give it another minute or so. We'll get Simon on board, and then we'll look to get underway. Hello, great to have you guys here again. So at Money Shots, who I held a really good introductory space with back end of last week. Really exciting project that are looking to do a multifaceted approach, and I think there'll be some excellent discussions on this session here. Because of your obviously very strong background in the gaming space and the development of your new NFT project. So look forward to getting you guys up. I can see Simon's now joined, so we'll get Simon up to the floor. For context, it's extremely early Simon's time, so always a bit of a challenge, particularly with the time difference at the moment. It's probably a bit crueler for the next 2 or 3 months until we move into kind of the daylight saving period of the year, when it's slightly less painful. I think I'm right in saying, Simon, it's 6 a.m. for you.
Yeah, it is. 6 a.m. is not too bad. It's more just I need to get to bed earlier.
Story of my life. Yes, absolutely. So I was just teeing things up, really. So obviously this is our regular Monday evening / Tuesday morning spaces. We've been running these now for probably over 6 months. It's certainly since before the turn of the year, a tremendous amount's happened within the broader Terra and beyond ecosystems. I think it doesn't need anyone really to dwell too long on that. But throughout the whole series that we've run, we've always tried to delve into kind of different subject areas. We've done quite a lot of deep dives into the NFT space over the last sort of 5 or 6 months. And particularly today's topic, which is quite sort of pertinent in the broader space, is that kind of movement where we're seeing there's a lot more projects now that are coming into the NFT space with a lot more game-focused content. And actually, we're fascinated by the opportunities that people coming from the gaming space are bringing. And with that in mind, I'm delighted that Money Shots, who obviously joined me for an introductory space at the back end of last week, they very much fall into that camp. And before we just get kind of into the sort of the start of the discussion, I just wanted to, as always, to say thank you to Terra Spaces, who are such a powerful and important force within the community, capturing all of these events and saving them, uploading them so that people can then enjoy them at a later time. I always make a what I call a rough cut recording of the live session as it's in progress, so that that's available immediately after the event. But actually, these guys do a superb job of clearing things up and remarkably quick progress to just get them out there on a saved for the ages process, which is really good. So thanks as always. So Simon, yeah, I think it'd be great to sort of kick things off. We'll get money shots on the stage in a second. Your thoughts on the kind of the next direction, next steps for projects kind of bringing that gaming experience into Web3. I know we're hoping to have another really good project joining us as well a little bit later on.
Yeah, it's interesting. We've kind of gone, feel like we've gone full circle with this topic because we did kind of open up with this topic a couple of months ago. I think we've already touched on it before, but it's good to go deep into it and to kind of expand again. It is one I believe it's quite personal to both of us due to, you know, we've been working on a project which kind of in this kind of space, you know, with gaming and NFTs. And we have some quite, you know, strong opinions or beliefs around this topic. So I guess we can touch on it. But the whole goal for us is to have an open forum, to have people to come up and discuss this and debate this in an open way. From myself personally, the way that I see gaming massively as the entry into crypto. I see NFT and gaming really being that bridge that's going to help onboard a lot of people into crypto. But I also believe that there's a long way to go in terms of sustainability in the gaming space, and we're going to see like a really big shift towards you know, really having a lot better games. And I think, you know, traditionally in the space, the play to earn, you know, the play to earn wave has you know, had some issues in terms of not having the sustainability, because people come in because they want to earn. They come in to basically earn, and then when they've, you know, kind of expended that, or when the customer base gets kind of large enough, then, you know, they drop off because the game, they're not actually playing the game because they want to play it, but they're playing it because they're there to, you know, earn tokens. So I do believe that there's going to be a lot of future value in gaming. And I believe like part of the, you know, the magic here is to really monetize games. So reverse engineer, you know, in the regular world, in TradFi world, you've got games that, you know, they might be free to play with, you know, you pay for unlocks, you pay for skins, you pay for items. But I believe that this is going to be like almost reverse engineered into gaming, where that income is captured inside the token. So instead of just inflating and printing a number of infinite tokens that then doesn't have any value capture, these mechanisms will be worked into the economics of the game so that they're still capturing that monetary value that then goes into the tokens, so that it's sustainable. So that's how I see it for the future. But we'll expand on it as we go through this call.
I think absolutely linked to that, and I'll bring in money shots in a second. I think it's important that the games actually have some kind of draw of their own, so value for their own sake, and are an enjoyable experience. I think we've seen examples of games that are purely there as a, if you like, a token mechanism, not necessarily talking about projects that we're close to, but it's important that the game has some kind of longevity draw, and there's an opportunity that people feel that they really want to play it because it's there. And I think we had a really good debate about that a few weeks ago. So I can see Lex has joined us as well. So there'll be some really good content input from there. Great to have you here. But I just thought initially we bring sort of Money Shots up. Thank you guys for joining us. Money Shots are a project that are set to launch. There is a recent spaces, I'll put a link on after this, where we went into quite some depth on the project roadmap and plans, and had a really good engaged audience. I want to say a few days ago, I think it was maybe Friday or Saturday. Time seems to always blur in crypto. So thank you for joining us.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me back. You know, as you know, if anybody doesn't know, I mean, you know, I've made games for over 10 years plus, Pokemon being one of them. But, and we've been doxxed as having that credentials on our project. And I think everything that Simon said is pretty on point. The thing that I think people don't realize is, you know, whether it's play to earn or free to play or whatever it is, it's about how much money it costs to operate a game. And if you're going to have a lot of players, there's a lot of investment in just operations. And I think you have to take, you know, when you're building something, even as simple as NFT, and you have visions of having a metaverse or having a game, you really have to plan from the very beginning an ecosystem that can self-sustain your team and your team's growth as your product grows without losing momentum, losing money, running out of things to give away, you know, that sort of thing. And that's really the trick of it all. You know, even if you look at mobile games, they originally had that same problem, and then they began to solve it slowly. And like I said, on the spaces that we did, you know, I've had Bored Ape Yacht Club contact me personally to help them figure some of that stuff out, because they're working on a mobile game at the moment. And, you know, it's not easy, because when you combine crypto and you combine, you know, mobile, and you combine, you know, play methodologies that people are used to versus play methodologies that might have a barrier of entry, it's more complicated than I think people think. So we're going to try to do something with our project. You know, we're doing a poker derivative game as a CCG, so I don't have to teach people the basic mechanics of the game. It's kind of like poker, but we're adding CCG elements, we're adding more fun, we're adding different things. But what I've been working on all week is, well, what are those mechanics? How do you have longevity? How do you sustain finances? Because you want to be able to reward your players, but you also have to pay for your operations. So how do we do all that together? And I think I'm going to put something out this coming week on that topic. I think I fleshed out my general thoughts, but we're going to share that. And I think Solana, believe it or not, they have, because they're somewhat builders, if they're not total degens, may have solved some of it in projects like D-Gods and others, but nobody's really put it all together into the game. So there's my initial thoughts.
That's excellent. I think you make a really good point there, that there is actually quite a lot of investment involved as you're looking to scale up for a game. So actually, you've got to make sure that not only does the game work, but actually, is it viable? So that you can actually, you know, maintain it with the team that's supporting it, the infrastructure around it, and that development side as well. So no, thank you for that. I think that's really fascinating. Obviously, I'd love to hear your thoughts as you sort of flesh them out, as you've mentioned there. So that's really good. I mean, perhaps at this point we can bring in Lex. Thank you for joining us. Obviously, we've had some previous discussions as well. Another project that's really building out, thoughts around creating a game. An immersive experience, and something that obviously is a fast evolving place. So yeah, it'd be great to have you on the space. Yeah, really just talking about the moves towards Web3 with immersive games and kind of NFT pathways. I think it's really important, I think, to Simon's opening remarks, that the NFTs and the gaming side really are an open door opportunity to bring new audiences into the crypto space and have something that's really compelling and isn't about, you know, obviously lots of us are here due to the kind of the DeFi and everything else, which is fantastic. It's about potentially capturing other audiences. And actually, when we're looking at play to own and play to, versus play to earn, there's lots of potential and opportunity there as well. So welcome, Lex.
Yo, it's a pleasure to be here. Yeah, and I think now more than ever, oh man, it's really important. Thinking about, you know, what Money was saying about financial viability, like that's more true and more applicable now than ever, because so many projects at this point, when there isn't kind of this artificially inflated hype money to throw around, because everyone's, you know, trying to make a flip or everyone's looking for a new opportunity, when people don't see your game as an investment, as a viable way to make money, because it's because of the market conditions. Are you still going to get engagement, right? Are people going to keep building? And so, you know, we're operating from the perspective of, you know, specifically with Strange Clan, you know, what, for one, we're still building, right? It's like we've set this up in such a way that ultimately we want to create something that's valuable, whether or not it's an investment opportunity. And I use that term very loosely, just in terms of what kind of expectations do people have who are in the crypto space versus people who just want to play a game, right? And that's why it's so important. I saw somebody post a tweet a while back, a couple of weeks back, about basically saying like, well, the entry point to get into a game like to play a AAA game is like, you know, $20 to $60, whatever. But in order to play a, you know, a blockchain game, it's like, you know, $200 to $500 to play it like 3 years from now. Right. And it's like, well, obviously that's the case because you're talking about two different ends of the spectrum, right? You're talking about people who are building now versus people who have already built something. And the biggest difference is that if we can make it financially viable, if we can make the decentralized model viable, we're giving new people the chance to enter the building space, right? Because Blizzard's always going to be able to make a game, right? If they went bankrupt today, they could get a loan tomorrow, right? They could have zero money in the bank. And yet they could still get, you know, they could borrow money. They have the tools and resources they need to build a game, you know, at any time they want, right? They're always going to be able to do that. Whereas independent developers, smaller teams, they're only able to make that happen because people have the foresight, right, to, you know, to buy into an ecosystem, whether it's through an NFT mint or some other mechanism. And that creates the opportunity, but you have to recognize we're in a different stage right now because so few people have been through that process of taking a game from an NFT launch to a game launch, right? Like how many teams have actually been through that whole process in a meaningful way that produce something that people want to play? Not that many. So yeah, that's kind of where we're at. It's like that's what's going to make it viable is understanding what are you buying, right? And is there something valuable to be had? Is there something people can care about, whether or not independent of the crypto market, right? Because the problem is most NFTs, most blockchain games, people are buying those PFPs or the characters or whatever it may be because they're looking for some kind of value appreciation in a short period of time, right? And as soon as the market goes sour, people are going to bail, right? So do people care about your game? Do they care about your story? Do they care about what you're creating? Despite, you know, any potential financial opportunities.
So an interesting argument there as well. I think isn't there, in terms of the stickiness of a program or a project. That was kind of what I was sort of trying to capture as well. But you made a very good point there. Absolutely, part of the involvement in this space absolutely is about value appreciation. So making sure that the community is sticky, the game is engaging enough to be sticky, even in times where perhaps, you know, the market's going sideways or downwards, or there's an appreciation phase that's perhaps a slower burn, there needs to be something there that kind of hooks people in. So sorry, I think Simon, you're about to jump up as well.
Yeah, it's two things as well. So I love what Money Shot said around, you know, funding the game. I'm wondering if you know, there's two main ways to, you know, if you fund that going forward, which is to do continual, you know, at least for a period of time, is to do continual raises over a period of time, like steps. The other one is also like if the token has really good value capture built into it, but that's also difficult because even if you've got really good tokenomics and value capture, tokens tend to follow the rest of the market in general too. So even if you've got, you know, imagine you've built into the tokenomics a way in which you can capture, you know, $50 a month membership fee. Not saying that people are paying that, but like, you work that into the tokenomics, so you're capturing that value from the users. If they want to unlock new quests or do all this sort of stuff, they have to hold a certain amount of tokens, or they have to do this. But I wonder how that works, considering like even if you've got the best tokenomics in the world, when the whole market goes down, no matter what your, you know, value capture is, tokens still tend to go down over the long term. That value capture obviously kicks in, but it still follows that trend. So it's quite interesting to look at.
Yeah, well, in regards to that too, I mean, all we need to do is look to the traditional market to see the analogies for these things, right? Kickstarter existed before, you know, we had these NFT blockchain games, right? And so people have done crowdfunding. Like, you don't need a token to do funding. There's so many ways to incentivize, right? Whether it's, also these kind of like pay-to-play type games, right? Or microtransactions, or like there's so many ways people have monetized games. The problem is that unfortunately, a lot of blockchain games have just kind of taken like the worst possible example of those and slapped a token or some type of blockchain asset onto it, such that it feels better because people know they truly own the asset, but it performs worse, or it can only perform for so long, because the actual game isn't good, right? They're not, we don't have enough, you know, true game mechanic developers in this space, people who think about like white hat versus black hat motivations, like short-term motivation versus long-term motivation, and other gamification principles, that people like Zynga games or other like mobile game creators have had to be thinking about for a long time, and why they've had very successful games that are being monetized in a non-traditional way, right? Through microtransactions, through some type of secondary marketplace, things like that, versus the typical, you know, you buy it for $20, $60 off the shelf, it has a fixed lifespan, right? And then you've got to make the next game. I mean, again, there's a lot of different models. The key is we have to be able to duplicate those in a good way, not using blockchain as a crutch to make a bad game better, but using blockchain as it's meant to be within the framework of existing game monetization mechanisms.
Yeah, I'll just say one more thing, Manu, and you can chip into this. The other thing that kind of ties into that and all of this as well is, how long does the game take to make? Because, you know, if a traditional gaming company, you know, raises a whole bunch of capital, right, and then they take 4 to 5, 6 years even to build their game, that's not going to work in crypto, right? Like, the attention span's not that long enough, and people are going to bail after, you know, 6 months or whatever. So how do you kind of keep people through that journey engaged? And I know you guys have done this really well with Strange Clan, but how do you keep people engaged during this process and release smaller MPVs or smaller games and stuff along the way to get to the final goal, which is to build the bigger and wider game, which may take, you know, 3, 4, 5 years, even if it's a really big and good game. I mean, obviously smaller mobile games and certain games may be shorter to develop, but that's an interesting one to look at too. I'll pass it to you, Money, and then we can kind of touch on that.
Thanks. Yeah, no, Simon, you said some really great stuff, and I really appreciated that. And then to Lex, I think, you know, one of the keys with making a good game on the blockchain is understanding your target demographic and your target audience. I think, like, we should be building games for the people that are going to embrace the game first. And I think that there's always this game building concept of, listen, you know, these are the type of games that everybody plays on mobile, or this, everybody likes this type of RPG or that sort of thing. And I think when you start from that perspective, you start building toward the masses instead of building to your core audience, who are degens and people who like to make money. And I think for us, that's why we went with a gambling game mechanic and something that we could, you know, build upon, was specifically because we sat in a room and we said, you know, who's our target audience? And we said degens. Like, and what do they like to do? They like to risk money. And how do we make that fun? And I think those are like core steps. And the thing that Simon said that's spot on is that, listen, we do have to build slowly over time to kind of ramp up our money. So like even our project, we have 2 NFT releases, and we're happy to tell you that we have 2 NFT releases. They're going to be fun, but they're also going to have core mechanics that lead up to, you know, this kind of release of a game. And I think that trying to build it just step by step is complicated, complex, and hard from a developer perspective. But from a consumer perspective or degen perspective, they shouldn't see anything but opportunity, 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 opportunity. And I think you can dangle that carrot for a very long time. And I think that degens would appreciate that. And when you combine degens with what they're looking for and what kind of game they're looking for, I think that's your core. That's the cream of the crop. That's what everybody's trying to find. I don't know that we'll do it, but you know, that's what I think is what everybody's looking for.
Yeah, I think a lot of it, and what you said about finding your target market, is huge, because ultimately, you know, you have specifically oriented your game towards, you know, something that's going to be appealing to the investor type, the degen type, people within the crypto ecosystem. But the problem is a lot of people are building a game that's actually meant for your everyday gamer, right? People who are on Overwatch or Fortnite or League. But the game they're building is really focused around this kind of play to earn mechanic, where it's, you know, there's some type of monetization that's fundamental to the game, right? And ultimately the game loses fun for the sake of creating value, right? But ultimately, those gamers don't care, right? They're not here to get paid. They're here to play, right? These people have, you know, they may come back from their day job, right? and grind, Final Fantasy or World of Warcraft, or you know what I mean? They may be grinding an MMORPG for hours and hours and hours, earning nothing of tangible value because it's a community that they've built, or it's the experience that's important to them. And so you really do have to know, like, what is the value proposition your audience cares about? Because yes, owning those digital assets is important. I think ownership is important to anything we build in the blockchain space. But, you know, kind of arbitrary burn mechanisms or tokenization mechanisms aren't going to cut it for a traditional gaming audience. If you're sacrificing real entertaining gameplay to achieve those, right? So it's like, you got to know your audience and what they care about. The problem isn't that, the problem is that in some ways we've sacrificed the real joy of traditional games, the games that we grew up with, or the games that we grew up loving, for the sake of owning a game that is now subpar because it's kind of has these arbitrary, you know, value accrual mechanisms or things like that. Totally. So that alignment is really important, and knowing who are you delivering this to.
Yeah, but also how long does it take to build such a good game? Because I mean, I even look at the time frames of, even if you look at obviously a bigger game like Skyrim or kind of larger games.
Yeah.
Again, 5-6 years to build. Like, crypto has been around for maybe like 10, right. You know? Yep. So it's exactly. Interesting to see that.
Yeah, there aren't, and that's my whole point, is that we're really groundbreaking in a lot of ways because there aren't a lot of people who have been through this whole cycle, right? I mean, NFTs have an even shorter history than crypto. And so having these different kinds of digital assets is new. And you know, in our case with Strange Clan, we did kind of break it up, like you mentioned, where we're planning 3 to 4 years to build out kind of this complete AAA, you know, action adventure role-playing game. And then in addition to that, you know, we have within the next 10 months, we're completing a 2D game that is more on the, it's a smaller feature set, right? Again, the goal is to deliver these things in increments. And we really are thinking about it like a Kickstarter, where you have to create engagement along the way, and you have to recognize different people are going to buy into your ecosystem at different points, right? We know the people who have gotten in thus far and who will get in with the Town 2 launch, those people want to be a part of the ecosystem, right? They are investing in a different kind of way, not investing in the typical financial sense, but they're putting themselves into, they want to own a bigger part of the ecosystem, right? They want behind the scenes. They want to get FaceTime with the team. Like, they want to be involved in what's being built with this world. But then we'll have people who get in with a different class of asset into the ecosystem at a much lower price point, right? When we're not looking for funding, right? We're looking to sustain the operation. So it's understanding, you know, what does each person want out of this? Because no, you're not going to have 1 million investors, right? You're going to have a couple thousand quote unquote investors, right? And then you're going to have thousands or hundreds of thousands of consumers, right? And those people want different things and should have different experiences throughout the process. So understanding that, you know, not just who is your audience, but what are the segments within your audience that might make a different kind of purchase? That's really important as well. And then, yeah, we've broken this stuff up. And ultimately what I think every person in the crypto market, every team could do better at is content. I think to me, content has been fundamental to what kind of shaped the Strange Clan brand. And it's really about storytelling. It's about creating something that is valuable and creates personal attachment outside of any financial incentive, right? Are people growing close to the brand, to the community, to the experience of your game? And that can be said of, you know, kind of your typical story-based game, like a Legend of Zelda, or like a gambling game, right? You can have people who take, whether it's, you know, fantasy football, or whether it's, there's ways that people get attached, whether it's team building, whether it's the communities that get built around those things. It doesn't have to be a story-based game to create that kind of emotional attachment. But I think that's really important. And the way that we do this best is through content, right? Frequent engagement in a meaningful way with our audiences. And that can look like, you know, for us, it looks like comics, it looks like art, it looks like bits of storytelling and writing throughout the engagement with the community. So I think those things are really important and part of what's going to sustain your community until you reach certain checkpoints.
I agree. That's why, you know, when you talk about, you know, that emotional connectivity, that's why I want all of my PFPs to look like your mom, because I think if it looked like your mom, everybody would want to play it and everybody would want it. Okay, I'm lying. I just made that up because I was sitting here thinking about it, and then I started doodling some pictures of my mom on a PFP, and I feel kind of weird. All right, but no, I mean, Lex, you're a very smart guy. I think that you have all. I looked at your website. I took a look at all your stuff while you were talking, and listen, you've got the right mindset for it. I mean, typical video games, just so everybody knows, you know, a typical, maybe not a AAA, maybe close, could be 18 months. Some of the big franchise games, like you're talking like a Skyrim and stuff like that, those are years in the making. But a good game can go 18 to 24 months. So don't think that it's too much and that you can't do it. But also at the same time, I'd rather people take their time and make something, you know, beautiful. And make something they really love than anything else.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, 100%. And that's again part of the framing that has to happen in the blockchain space, is that we can't fall into this typical market cycle, hype driven development, right? Where people are trying to deliver something tomorrow, right? The more we shorten the time span and create these kind of arbitrary deadlines, the less opportunity we have to create something of lasting value. So, yeah, I mean, 100%. And that's where getting the funding and keeping your community engaged does have to be creative, right? And we're building in stages, or, you know, allowing the people who, for us, I mean, the biggest, I would say, opportunity for people who buy into the collection, the biggest opportunity for them is engagement with us, right? Creating new, unique, exclusive access points to get an inside view into what's going on, right? That's number one. But for that to be compelling, again, you have to be, you know, a team that people want to be close with, that people want to be doing that kind of collaboration with. So it takes a certain personality of team. It takes a certain engagement with the community to build that relationship. So access to the team is one way that people can kind of incentivize the community long term. Hey, you're going to get it behind the scenes. You're going to get to test the features as we're putting them out. You know, we've released different builds of the game, or different game features we're developing super early, right? Everything's obviously like very, very early at this point. But the goal is like people get to see what's happening. So there are fewer questions. There are fewer, you know, people reaching out being like, hey, what's going on, when we have like, you know, a live chat every single morning, right? So the communication, those kind of exclusive opportunities for engagement, all those things are ways to kind of carry people through, you know, the normal and natural life cycle of a AAA game or high quality experience.
So in terms of funding, and this is an interesting one, right? So looking at funding from a game perspective and the way that that kind of is laid out, because I know that you guys at Strange Clans were very bootstrapped, you know, funded yourselves and through the NFTs and stuff like that. But obviously, when you look at it like a larger scale game, right, you're looking at, you know, quite a large kind of funding roadmap. I mean, obviously, with, you know, Money Shots has talked about, you know, smaller games, you know, smaller class games. If you look at a big game, like a really, you know, involved high development game, I mean, you're looking at, you know, 50 to 150 million to obviously... Yep. You know, build that game, right? So when you look at that, obviously the way that I see it is, you know, there is going to be some external capital almost needed to help fund that if you're building a larger scale game. But obviously, like, the value that you add in the early stages compared to, you know, if you're a Blizzard or you're a gaming company like that, you've got the equity, you've got the like almost the right. credibility, right, to raise at that level, right? So If you're a gaming company that maybe doesn't have that, then you've got to rely on obviously the people that you attach yourself with, but also community and the early successes and the early growth before you have a game to be able to raise capital to a level that you may need. And obviously raise capital through NFTs and you get Bored Ape Yacht Club that's managed to do it, but they're, you know, obviously at a much larger level in terms of the NFT raises. But yeah, what are your thoughts on that, guys, around that and that kind of roadmap and vision around you funding and raising along the way to be able to build the game?
Oh, that's huge. And that's been like pivotal in terms of our whole process. I mean, this is something that we've been dealing with from being a small studio, trying to make kind of immersive virtual experiences for brands like Capitol Records and Warner Brothers and Amazon, all the way through to trying to bring this into the blockchain space. And I would basically say to anybody who doesn't have a history, does not have, you know, experience building a product, doesn't have a reputation to kind of put into the ring to do some type of raise. Like if you're finding yourself in a position where, well, this is the game that I want to make, but I don't have the funds to do it. For one, scoping it properly, like figure out what you're even talking about. A lot of people, the problem is they put something like, oh, and we're going to have a metaverse into a bullet point and they have no idea what that means. So for one, figure out what it is you're actually trying to build and consult with the technical people who can help you understand what that scope looks like. But then also, once you've done that, if you don't have the clout or the experience or the history to kind of like prove your ability, then go do those things, right? Like find a smaller commitment, right? Don't jump out the gate trying to build the biggest thing without the background to back it up. Go build something smaller, right? And it's like, you know, people can trust you to build something you haven't built before as long as it's a reasonable stretch, right? If they can see you have a really good art team, but don't have a history in development, there's a lot of things they could accept you being able to build that, you know, would be within a reasonable range of that. Well, they know how to manage a team, they know the production of art, but here are the new variables we're adding when it comes to building this kind of game. If you add like 10 different variables, it's like, oh, we're going to build this massive multiplayer metaverse, whatever. It's like, well, of course, no one's going to believe that. And if they do, chances are you're going to disappoint them. And you end up with like a Pixelmon scenario, right? Where, you know, millions of dollars went to the people at the top and they spent, you know, who knows how much on Fiverr talent with no ability to coordinate what this would actually turn into. So that happens, right? It's like find the appropriate scale is kind of the first thing, right? And for us, that was a lot of the events that we were doing, the virtual experiences that we were doing with Passage before we moved into kind of specifically building the StrangeClan experience.
Okay. Simon. One of the things that I just want to point out too, and really quick, and then you can go back and say your part there, Simon, is that, you know, I would say that once you start building and you actually have a foundation, even if you're not done, don't forget right now is a huge time for traditional venture capitalists to look at your product too. I mean, if you get it to a certain point and you have mild success, I mean, they're currently looking to invest. And that includes, you know, Animoca Brands and a bunch of other really big companies. And if you've got something, even if you've got the reputation, don't be hesitant, because I know people and they're currently looking for to spend their VC dollars on some blockchain games. They don't really understand it 100%, not all of the companies, but Animoca does. And, you know, I think that's another way to get your funding if that's what you're looking for. So I think you can bootstrap yourself to a certain point, but don't be discouraged by trying traditional VCs once you've gotten to a point where you actually have content, because they're more likely to invest in a game that's partially done and potentially completable than they are, you know, some brand new project that doesn't have a leg to stand on.
No, I totally agree. And I think that methodology, whether it's VC funding, whether it's some form of crowdfunding or, you know, an NFT collection, these types of things, I think the principle there is true either way, because the principle is don't try to raise all the money at once, right? It's like raise the money you need to get to the next checkpoint, right? And be transparent with your audience. Hey, like, we're going to do this collection, right? That's why we broke up the StrangeClan collection into two towns, right? so that, you know, we can deliver one collection when we're a nobody who nobody knows, right? And we have some history of having built, you know, products like this with Passage. But then, you know, by the time Town 2 comes out, we have an established reputation, we have relationships, like, you know, people have seen success of the first collection so far, right? There's a certain expectation which allows you to have more credibility. So break these things up along the way, right? Whether that's VC funding. And the thing you have to watch out with for VC funding is just making sure that you are always, whether you're raising money through individuals or through venture capital or whatever it may be, make sure that you're linking yourself to people with common values, because it's so easy to see like, oh shoot, this company or this group is willing to give me $50 million or whatever it may be. And yet they're going to ruin your project, right? If it's a bad fit, right? They're going to dump on your community. They're going to, whatever it may be, right? Make sure that you have good value alignment. And that's true of your community as well as your, you know, if you have investors, right? Because you don't want a community that was in this for a quick pump, right? And is dumping your project, scaring away people who could have been, you know, hodlers. So again, that value alignment is super important. And then, you know, like Money said, breaking up those pieces so that, you know, get the money you need to get this to the first checkpoint and then raise another capital or go to VC funding. Like that way you've kind of broken that bigger goal into smaller pieces that allow you to kind of prove yourself.
Yeah. Wow. Hey guys, I'm sorry I'm so late. But a lot of good stuff that Lex is dropping over here. One thing to just add on to that is that I think that you know, raising money when you don't need it is always the best time to raise money, but being able to think ahead about when you actually are going to need it down the road is, you know, also very critical. And I think me and Simon and Superterra, I think, had a conversation a while back. It was at Twitter Space a while back, where basically I was kind of like going over, you know, how we sort of have done a lot of layering with both getting funding to continue to bootstrap and also lead into like further checkpoints. That, you know, we talked a little bit about how Prologue kind of was a part of that equation, and also how, you know, we're trying to build out this game in layers. So yeah, a lot of that is stuff that we're trying to apply to ourselves. And, you know, market conditions aside, like that doesn't even really affect it that much, because ultimately the principles are true regardless of what the market sentiment is.
I see that we got wrecked as well in the spaces. Are you guys building a game by any chance? No, but I think we can dig into, like, obviously, you know, we talk with Varel and Lex a fair bit around, you know, play to earn versus play to own and heaps of the mechanics of games. But it's very exciting, not just from the own NFT perspective, but also like gaming economics that can be brought into blockchain and starting to tie in, you know, outside, you know, worlds like DeFi and stuff into games. It's like a fun chemist experiment which can kind of mix and match and add some cool things. But for me, I kind of wonder, you know, Lex, you talked about starting in stages. Lex and Money talked about, you know, starting in stages and not building the whole thing from day one, which is, I think, is very important. And it's about kind of portraying that roadmap. The other side of that coin, though, is at what level does, you know, a project, for example, build an NFT collection? But then if they want to build a game around that, there's so many extra layers they need to have thought of or added from day one, which I was actually talking with CeFi about this a fair bit around, you know, if you start an NFT collection and you build it, but you haven't thought of at least some rough framework of the end game in mind, that could cause some friction in the future when you turn it into a game and go, hey, I haven't actually figured out the right game mechanics and the right everything for the NFT collection that I've built. So it's kind of like, I'm guessing, that balancing act between, you know, not going too big day one, especially on the outward roadmap, but also kind of thinking about those smaller things like, hey, if I'm building a, you know, multiplayer game and all this sort of stuff and I launch an NFT collection, and then you find out that that NFT collection isn't at all kind of set up to even work in that game, that's quite an interesting kind of balance. So I guess there's some things to think about there for sure.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And all that stuff you've got to, again, and this is the issue of, like, if you don't have that money up front and you need to get the community involved in raising that money for an NFT collection, it's kind of on you to have more planning and more forethought gone into how you're going to incorporate this in the process, right? Because if you start off with money, you have more options, right? But if you start off without money and you're reliant on other people, you have fewer options, right? You got to be able to create a an opportunity that's going to be exciting for those people. Why are they going to get in early, right? If they could just wait until the game's out, right? What is the unique incentive for them? So yeah, it kind of requires creating these different roles in the ecosystem, people who are kind of on the inside in terms of content. And the more trust you have with the community, the more you can float that kind of thing, right? If after Strange Clan, we were to make another game, it'd be a lot easier to just tell people like, hey, buy this Genesis collection. You'll get the inside scoop just like you did with Strange Clan. You'll have a unique journey. There'll be lots of cool value propositions for people in the ecosystem. It'd be a lot easier for people to just be like, yeah, I don't know exactly what it is, but I'm down for it, right? Or to say, hey, I have no idea what this is, but I know everyone's going to want it because they saw what happened to Strange Clan. That in and of itself is enough to hop into this, you know, 10K collection or whatever it is, right? So the more trust you have, the more options you have. And also the more money you have, the more options you have. So if you have neither trust nor money, then you're going to have to be really creative in how you set yourself up from the beginning.
Yeah, and I think you do need to think about it. Like, I think you need to think about your game ahead of time in so much as it, you know, you have something unique to provide. Because here's the thing is that the NFT marketplace is crowded. Like, there's lots of projects out there. So why is somebody going to, you know, buy your NFTs? So even to sell the NFTs to begin with, you kind of need to have a unique selling proposition from the get-go. So even if you don't necessarily have like what the full game is, like if you have at least, you know, some element of, you know, what is unique about the game, you'll probably have enough as well to craft out, you know, the NFTs, the art style, like what is ultimately unique about the collection as a whole. So I do think that from the get-go, you probably need to have mocked out like what it is that you're aiming towards, because I think it's really hard to make the NFT collection unique to begin with if you haven't already done that.
I totally agree. You know, when we looked at it, you know, we came from the perspective of let's release an NFT project. It doesn't even have to have, you know, 100% direct relativity to the game. But what does matter is your tokenomics, whether you're talking NFT tokenomics or token tokenomics into game tokenomics. Because for all we know, we have three different tokens, three different types of NFTs or tokens altogether. And I think if you haven't mapped out from the very beginning, if you want to be a blockchain project and you haven't mapped out what your tokenomics are from the very beginning all the way to the end, then it doesn't matter what your gameplay or what all the other stuff are, because that's the thing that's going to bite you in the butt. That's the thing that's going to hurt your project financially or otherwise, because it's all that part has to gel. You know, art doesn't always have to gel. You can make changes. You can always, you know, there is very few mobile play-to-earn games that don't change on the fly. In fact, that's what they're about, right? They do A/B testing. They change some of their mechanics as they're learning what triggers, you know, the pay button more often. And so you're going to make mechanical changes. Just the one thing in this space that I've learned is you can't make tokenomic changes very effectively or without hatred. So that's the one thing that we're thinking about is how does it play out all the way to the end, even if that's 2 to 3 years from now.
So I actually have an opposite approach. I don't think that it's that much opposite, but it's it's not opposite in what it cares about. It's opposite in what it's pulling as the lever. So you said that, you know, tokenomics are hard to change, and so therefore that's the important thing to focus on. Tokenomics are hard to change. So I actually think that that's the important thing to not be the main selling point. And here's kind of my thought process. I think you keep that part as simple as possible. And the reason is because all the projects that I've seen rely heavily on tokenomics also are really not fun games. They didn't focus at all on making a fun game.
And they tried to get money into the project that was motivated by getting money out of the project. If everybody who comes in to your play to earn game is motivated just to get money out of it, then basically you have a ticking time bomb where the buck is always past the future. And eventually, you know, the value ladder collapses and the last person who came in loses. That's the risk that you have. And you had to get it right up front for most of these projects, unfortunately. So my approach, and this is why I always talk about play to own versus play to earn, is use a lot of the models that mobile games have, that traditional games have when it comes to how do you create value that users want to enter into. Because my users, I can have some users that have the desire to get money, that's okay. But if all of my users have the desire to get money, that's a problem. Because you know that doesn't work in any business model. There has to be a customer. At some point, there has to be a customer. And the customer has to be paying for something that isn't just getting money. Because if, for example, I'm in real estate, think about how many people, how many different types of players are in that game. You have the people who just want to live somewhere, right? And they're willing to pay somebody. They don't even need to own the space. You have the people who, want to own the space because they want customization. They want to be able to change it at their whim. And they're okay with doing the work. And then you have the people who they don't want to live anywhere. They just want to make some money. So they buy the place and then they rent it out to somebody. Or they do a flip because somebody else doesn't actually want to do the work to customize it. They just want a really nice house. So just in that one simple example, you have a game that's right there that many people use to make money. People use to have fun, and people also use to take care of their basic needs. And there's various different players, various levels of being involved in that. And I think that's what play-to-own games and what NFT games in the future need to lean on. Because otherwise, again, you have to create that delicate balance that somehow magically makes the numbers constantly tick up and, never tick down. I think a big issue that happened with Luna is that there's one lever that people were motivated by. And you can just see that in the numbers of how many people held UST in Anchor. And the second, those investors, because everybody in there was thinking like investors, saw a signal that said, hey, things aren't good right now. Everyone ran. And there was a run on the bank. If more people were motivated by different reasons to hold UST other than as an investment, you wouldn't have had a run on the bank like that. If it was only 20% of people, it wouldn't have made the impact that it made. So I think this is huge in many areas in crypto, not even just in games. I think this is huge in any way in which we're trying to productize blockchain.
Oh, I think he got kicked down. I don't know what happened. He must have the connection must have dropped out. So I'll bring him back up.
I think I offended him deeply with my hard opinions on Playdown.
It's a classic Twitter rugging. Mine's been dropping in and out as well. So I think good old pre-Elon setup is not as reliable as it should be. So the money shots you back. I don't know what happened
there. I got back. Sorry, I'm driving to a different city, so it's a little complicated. No, I don't disagree with that, but I think tokenomics are not, people just wanting money, and I think that's the mistake, fundamental mistake, perception-wise, and it's probably what you interpreted from that statement. Now, I think that, just like a play-to-earn game on mobile, you need to build these mechanics that operate without the user knowing about it. And that's the fundamental thing that keeps your, product, financially stable. And I think that you need to think about financial stability while you're building a great game. And it doesn't have to be front or forward facing to the consumer. The consumer just wants a good, fun experience. They never want to know anything about what you're doing in the background. If you do it right, they won't know. And I think, you know, one of the things that I would say is there's a lot of great games that didn't make a lot of money. And so, you know, whether that's on Xbox or PS5 or what have you, you know, everybody has good intentions. But I think when I look at all the games that even I made that didn't do financially well, it's because from if you're talking about play to earn or mobile games, fundamentally, you know, you didn't build the core mechanics to keep or think about the logistics of keeping, you know, yourself financially stable, even mechanically in a game, as opposed to, you know, on paper or in a P&L. And that's the one lesson that I've learned. You know, I just want to share that part because it's not about whether or not the game is good. You know, my belief is that everybody has good intentions and all game designers make the very best game they know how to make. And it's always heartfelt. But, you know, where we miss the boat, and all of us do it, is that financial stability and how do we make this thing last? Because no matter how fun it is, unless it's the one out of, you know, 10,000, you know, PS5 games that hit AAA status, you know, you're really going to have to think about that.
Oh, yeah. So I'm not at all disagreeing with that part. I think that if you want to, so here's the thing. I was in e-commerce for a while, built a seven-figure business in that world. And one of the biggest things with launching a new product was, you had to meet minimum standards of what the quality was for you to even be able to market it in such a way to get people's attention. So I think you have to figure out, you know, what your USP is. And I think the USP, especially if you're saying, hey, like, let's keep this tokenomics stuff, you know, in the background, that's great, because that's, you know, that's how a lot of traditional mobile games work as well. You know, you don't really feel the revenue pull, you know, and it actually feels good sometimes to spend that money because you're like, oh, this is solving a problem for me in the immediate. So when it comes to actually getting people's attention, if all that stuff is in the background, all right, well, then you really do need something in the game that has a unique selling point that draws players in that want to play. So what is that unique selling point? If it's not that it's a play to earn game, or if it's not that it's, you know, crypto backed, you know, what is it? Maybe it is that it's crypto backed, but, you know, if we're saying that a lot of the mechanics are still hovering in the background, then maybe you can't use that as well. I think there needs to be elements of the gameplay itself that draw people in, some type of hook. I mean, something like, Flappy Bird, you know, one of the most simplest games that has ever been made. The reason why that game did so well is just because of the fact that it made itself shareable. And people were like, oh, that looks simple. I bet I can beat that score. And it was just perfectly marketed to the casual gamer. So whatever your mechanic is, you know, you just need to know, like, hey, this is what I'm going to create with my game. And yeah, definitely always have a business model that works for you. You know, I think that's always been true of, you know, but here's the thing is that I think that the crypto world needs to actually look at themselves as a business, as opposed to, you know, just creating some type of architecture. Because I've seen a bunch of crypto projects fail because they thought that they could just continue to grow the value of the token, and that was somehow going to sustain them without ever taking in revenue. And I think that that's the part where you can't sub out revenue with tokenomics.
I think one of the interesting kind of other takes on this is, and this plays into, you know, maybe the downside of play to earn games that you're talking about, RL, is the one thing that play to earn's done well, I think, especially during the boom, was it almost acted as a very good marketing tool, but maybe the wrong marketing tool, because there's so much noise out there, right, in terms of games and competing with other games, that a lot of games gained traction and virality based on, you know, obviously their tokenomics and people playing and you know, like Axie Infinity and stuff, which ultimately weren't sustainable over the long term. but maybe the game developers didn't have an incentive to necessarily make it sustainable because they knew that they could gain that virality by building these token structures. So that's interesting to look at. Like when you look at incentives of what people build, maybe they had more incentives to kind of build it in a way that you know, wasn't sustainable, which isn't going to work over the long term. Might work in the peak of a bull run, but not over the long period and wanting to build a real game.
Yeah, I think that's 100% true because that is what is biting a lot of people who are trying to follow. There's a lot of people who followed Axie in their peak and didn't foresee, you know, this inevitable fall. But if you actually ever played, you know, a couple hours of Axie, you knew, hey, the only reason why I'm doing this is because I can make money. That's it. If that is your only reason for doing it, do you think that you're actually going to continue that into a, you know, a bear market where the value is so low, right? If that's literally your only motivation, then that's definitely not, you know, especially after playing that game, it's like, that's definitely not going to carry that game. So I think that people are trying to use the tokenomics as a, you know, a marketing hook. But the issue with that being a marketing hook is it only works when, you know, the tokenomics are exciting. So what do you do in a bear market when, you know, people aren't excited about your token because it's not super valuable? Well, they should be excited about your gameplay because that is valuable. And you should still be able to make money in a bear market because, you know, that's how other games work. Other games are able to make money no matter what the market conditions are around them. You know, look at any of the mobile games right now. You know, Clash of Clans is not hurting. They're crushing it. For a long time, they've been crushing it. So,
yeah, I think this maybe touches on what we've talked about privately a lot around, you know, earning NFTs over earning tokens, right? Because the great thing with that is if you can earn like items that are emotional that play a part in the game, those items may actually still be worth something in a bull market. So maybe that's the, you know, I've always been a believer that earning items that can then be sold on to, mm-hmm. you know, then earn, you know, tokens or earn stuff from that then down the track is great. But I do believe that could be powerful because what happens is you're earning all these items and you've got to work out the items to make sure they're not overinflationary and stuff like that. And I've talked about and worked through a lot of these kind of mechanics on a deeper level around, you know, tokenomics being used in the background and everything like that. But from an item perspective, right, these items in a peak of a bull run could also be enough incentive to get people in and to build that marketing that you do need to stand out, right? Like you're cutting through all this noise. Great gameplay is great as well, but you also do need this virality and this marketing push that helps you to kind of, I mean, community helps that massively as well, the ability to build a strong community from day one. But in a game where there's, in a world where there's like thousands and thousands of games, you still need to kind of get that stand out and that virality. And I guess that can be a part of it as well.
Yeah, I think where I keep hearing you go is, you know, tokenomics is almost a niche. Like crypto is a niche and people who want to play a crypto game is a niche. And that niche helps you stand out in the other crowded market, which is games, right? Which is important. You need to have something that like makes you stand out. And I think that is a very good niche. And I think that's one that should be leveraged. The issue is that if you don't make if you don't have the potential bridge to cross over into a neighboring market, like Axie, there's no way that game is going to leave the crypto niche. It's not a fun game. There's no way that it can leave that core motivator that's built around, because it wasn't designed for that. It was designed to only pull one lever. So I think that when you're designing your game, like totally pull that lever, pull that, use that crypto niche to your advantage. But on the flip side of it, you got to be thinking about what is the neighboring niche that I'm trying to build towards that's much bigger, right? So if you're building a casual puzzle game, you need to be able to market to the casual puzzle game players. So you need to make a good casual puzzle game that stands out from that crowd, so that when the guys who are big fans of your game, because they're crypto guys and they, you know, love the tokenomics and all that, they build up, they become the early adopters and they help you launch the game and it gets out there. You want it to find that audience and be able to click with the audience that's even bigger, that's right next to that.
Yeah, I agree with all of that. I think, though, the one thing about Axie that's a lesson learned that everybody's got to remember, they were number one. They may not be number one right now, but the reason why they were so successful is they knew who they were targeting their product toward, and that made them super successful. People could say Basie, even with ApeCoin, knew who their target demographic was, and they're super successful, and they're working on a game right now. And so, yes, you want to make great games, but don't forget fundamentals. Target audience, is one of them. If you're trying to overreach on a game or your product, and to people that it might be hard to get one way or the other, that might, this timing wise, it might not be perfect timing for you. I mean, and to each their own in some ways, but I feel like the way to success is to again focus on your target audience, and you have an audience for who that audience is, and focus on what they may want. And in everything that you said, create levers and create gameplay, build tokenomics and mechanics that appeal to those people, and do it well. And if you could do that, maybe you might have the same success, because no matter how you look at Axie, they made a ton of money, and Basie makes a ton of money, And so, we don't want to look at those as bad examples. We want to look at those as, what did they do that was right, and what could we do today that can make it even better? And that's how we started this project. Actually, was from that core philosophy. That's sort of our mantra, is target audience, what worked, how can we communicate with that target audience, what do they understand, what can we give them that's fun and engaging, but at the same time have all these little gizmos and gadgets that may pertain to tokenomics, may not, but how can we put that all together and then slowly bridge that gap over time, instead of trying to do it, all at once. I think anybody trying to build a game that's far reaching and not looking at that target could be up for some challenges. It could still be a great game, but I think financially it could be a challenge. And that's, I just want people to kind of hear that side of it. And it doesn't mean we'll be successful, but that's just our mantra. And that's just how we decided to look at the problem, because there's tons of problems in the gaming space and with regards to NFTs and crypto. And I think one of the fundamental things has always been target audience. And the second thing is good games for that target audience. You had a bunch of degens making games they didn't know how to build. Now you're having a bunch of people that know how to make great games, but they may not understand the degens. And so we've got an opportunity to kind of bridge some of that gap, and maybe become the next Axie Infinity for somebody, maybe even on this Spaces. And I applaud you, and anything I could do to ever help you, I will. But I think that's where the problem is right now, and I think we got to solve the right problems and take the wins now, and with those wins, make that market grow so you can make and expand and build anything you can dream of. I'm all for NFT and blockchain and gaming ownership, but I think we got to look at the big picture and really focus on your target audience.
I really appreciate that. And I think one of the reasons that it's not that, Axie or Bored Ape Yacht Club are not good examples. It's understanding, what did they achieve, right? And in some ways, Axie was the first, right? I mean, in terms of a complete game that had, you know, the mechanics you would expect, the branding you would expect, like that really presented the complete picture in terms of whether it's a mobile game experience or otherwise, right? Any kind of traditional gaming experience. And bringing that to the blockchain space, Axie is one of the first ones to complete that picture. So it's what they did is unique in that regard, but then there's the question, is what they set up sustainable, right? And I would ask the same question for Board 8 Yacht Club, because, you know, in terms of the game they're building, there's been a lot that's happened so far in terms of the opportunities they've created and what they've made with the collection. But is this sustainable, right? And again, we have so little history in the market to know for sure what's going to last, but we have a lot of history in the traditional gaming market. And not only that, we have a much smaller crowd to work with in the degen space, right? For those who are already kind of initiated into crypto, there's only so many people to work with. I mean, we have really a very limited number of active users who are potential users for any given game. We're kind of fighting for a very, very small market share.
But they're attracting people outside of just crypto. They do get that traction, yeah.
Well, and you hope. I mean, that's kind of my point is that, like, in terms of not just understanding who is our target market, but in choosing who do we want to target, I think it's really important that we include more and more of the traditional gaming space, that we make what we're building to those standards and for that market, so that we can bring those people into the blockchain space, that we can grow the ecosystem for everybody and make blockchain assets more of a standard within the gaming ecosystem.
I guess that's what Money Shots was sort of talking about, though, is the differences. You have a League of Legends and you've got a Candy Crush, right? They're both games, but they achieve different things and they reach different audiences, right? Candy Crush kind of game is very short-lived, very high hype and high virality that reaches a much wider audience and a much non-gaming audience, right? But it doesn't stay around very long. There's still people playing Candy Crush now, right?
Oh, yeah.
There's still people monetized from Candy Crush, but in general, like the wave has passed, right? And this is kind of how I see the difference between, you know, sort of what you're doing and Axie. Axie wasn't, you know, Axie reached a very wide, fast audience, went up in the hype very quickly, actually reached very massive traction in the Philippines and third world countries around, you know, kind of scholarships and things like that. But right. And then it's sort of still found its niche, right? This kind of game has kind of found its niche in some of those communities. But it achieved different things, right? Like, I think it's important to kind of differentiate that too, and sort of what Money Shots was saying, that, you know, some games aren't going to be 5-year roadmaps, high quality games that's going to be targeted at gaming.
Oh, totally.
Some games are going to be around, you know, they're going to be shallower games that are quicker, that are less in depth. They still need obviously the great mechanics inbuilt, but they're going to be
exactly
high virally, high meme, high degen focused, because that's you, not just crypto degen, but just real world degen.
Right.
Like, well, everybody's talking about it.
And that's why the mechanics are so important. The mechanics, right? Because what does Candy Crush have, or even Castle, what is it called? Clash of Clans or Battle Royale, whatever these different mobile games are. What do they have that almost zero blockchain games have today? They have a ginormous user base of people because it's extremely accessible. That are not, they're not being paid to play. They're paying to play the game, whether it's through microtransactions or, you know, different ways that those companies are monetizing those users in these free-to-play games, right? Again, free-to-play because it's a very low barrier to entry. Whereas with blockchain games, it's very different. It's much harder to get a user because your NFT can cost anywhere from $50 to $200 to $500 or thousands of dollars, depending on what it is, right? And so again, the user flows are very different, and that's okay. That's totally okay, because you can have a different class of user that expects a different kind of experience, right? But we can't sacrifice the playability, right? Gameplay. We can't sacrifice gameplay. It has to have solid mechanics that are enjoyable and exciting enough that people would continue to put money into the system. Because again, like Errol said, if everyone's pulling money out of the system, then it's just a pyramid scheme, right? Last one out loses. But if you have a mechanics that are exciting, that are addictive, that capitalize on, you know, quality gameplay, mechanic, motivation, right? Human motivated design, then you're going to be able to create something that some people could be pouring money into the system, and other people could potentially be drawing value from the system. But it can't be a zero sum game. You have to create a system that incentivizes people to contribute as much or more so than it incentivizes people to withdraw. So,
you guys should talk about. I'm really curious to hear about is the game that Money is talking about the game that you guys are working on, Simon, or is it different?
No. Money's building his own game. Do you want to talk about that,
Bruce? Yeah, Money, do you want to talk about your game?
Yeah, sure. Why not? Thanks for letting me talk about it. By the way, I appreciate it. You know, one of the things that quick thought was, we worked with a lot of people from Wizards of the Coast, and I will say, you know, when you're in the real world gaming space, it's highly competitive. It's very difficult. You're trying to find, even in the real world, you're trying to figure out who your target is, what game you're trying to make, you know, how much money you can make off of it. There's billions of players now. It's hard, you know, and it's difficult, and I get it. But now you're in a more minute space, and that's why, you know, our mantra, we kind of came up with this concept. So I love CCGs, you know, worked on the Pokemon CCG and a bunch of others, worked on massively multiplayer online games, worked for some of the biggest franchises in video game history, you know, everything from Half-Life on to, you know, Pokemon. And, you know, one of the things that I think we wanted to do is just come up with a game that had a simple mechanic that people understood, but change it a little bit so that it's more collectible and more fun. And the game that we chose, which is in the public domain, is poker. You know, you have everything from Paigao Poker, you have, you know, Texas Hold'em, etc. That's my Tesla telling me I got to pay attention to the road. Hold on. I gotta shift. Give me a second. Okay. So what we wanted to do is just create a game based on that, but also make it a CCG. So we have a variation. We call it basically a different way of playing poker that is what we think more fun and more degen. It's recognizable yet collectible at the same time. And we think that that's kind of like it's a good formula if we can pull it off, because it checks all of the boxes, you know, collectability, fun gameplay, degen, it doesn't fall in a gambling bucket just like it doesn't in real life, right? So we can kind of do some pretty interesting things with it. And that's kind of what we're working toward right now. We have an NFT project that we're building just so we can get some of the passion out, some of the artwork out, not for the game, but just something we wanted to do to kind of build some money so we could finance it properly. And then we have a second NFT project coming out. And then we have a third, which will be the PFPs for the game. And then we have the game. And they all tie together. And like I said early in the call, you know, we're kind of going to put together a financial roadmap for everybody to look at probably next week that kind of explains how we're tying everything together so that it's a holistic economic ecosystem. And then, you know, we can focus after we do that, we can just focus purely on making it fun and making it engaging. You know, the whole theory behind the game is, you know, it's basically, we originally called it Flipper FUD. And so it's a poker game where you can FUD basically other players. And so you can force them to add more money in the pot. You can do all kinds of interesting things. And how we do that is kind of interesting. And we'll put more information about that later. But that's kind of what we're working on. We're very passionate about it. We've made, you know, we obviously worked on collectible card games before. So we understand the mechanic. We think it fits a little better into crypto right now. It may not be the game I would want to create 5 years from now. But it's something that I think that could be embraced in the crypto space this very moment. So that's kind of a brief overview. My big task for next week is to put out that kind of financial roadmap, and then we can work on the game roadmap after that.
So what I like about your game is that you are making something that requires money to come into the game. And I think that the biggest issue from most like play-to-earn games and how they're set up and designed is that they're only taking Axie's model, which honestly, I think, and this is just me, I think it's broken. I don't think it was ever going to do well. I think it was proof that, this was a use case of what a bad model could look like if you start out with, trying to just put out NFTs that could raise in value so high that the only people who actually will benefit actually can't afford the NFTs to get in. So thankfully, a bunch of people created like monetizable entry points for people. And so a bunch of different investment categories opened up. That was cool. But I think that was not ideal. I think that people started creating structures as if that was the ideal and that was what was behind their success. I think the biggest thing behind their success was that they created a game that had real world implications. Like, and I think that what you're creating has real world implications. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, totally. I mean, that's the idea. I think the litmus test for me and the one bit of advice I can give anybody is that the objective for you to make a game that's successful on the blockchain, or maybe almost anywhere nowadays, is that you want them to want to give you money. And if you made a game and a mechanic, I don't care if it's financial or playability wise, if you created a mechanic that gets people to want to give you money, then you've solved that problem. And I think that's the problem you're trying to solve. And more so in the blockchain gaming space than any other gaming space. But yeah, we don't want there to be a big gaming barrier to entry. That's why we chose poker as our foundation. We also have a friend who's in the World Series of Poker, so we thought we might be able to leverage that at some point. But, so it was all meaningful. It was all thoughtful. We really wanted to do something that was really different game-wise that nobody's done before that could transcend into the real world. So, like, you stake your Money Shots version 2 NFTs. We're going to mail out. You pay shipping. And we'll mail out everybody a physical version of the game. And because we think that by having it in your hand, it'll make you even more addicted to the product. And you want to play with your friends. And you want to show your friends what it does. And then they're going to want, decks. And maybe we come up with a Series 2 decks that we just sell in physical form. But, these are the types of ideas that helped us kind of build a roadmap to, how do I fund this over the long haul? And what can we do while funding it to make it addictive that they want to give us their money, whether it's the real world or the blockchain world?
Yeah.
Hey guys, this conversation is incredible, but I got to hop off. It's been a blast. All right,
see you, man.
All right, man.
One of the things I've always said is that the reason why I think that play to earn has a massive limitation on, like, because everyone's talking about, oh, play to earn is going to take over gaming. I really don't see that. I think that play to earn is actually very, very, very niche. But I think that what you're hitting on actually is one of the examples of how play to earn can really work. Because what play to earn really incentivizes is, for lack of a better term, gambling. Like, it really incentivizes people who want the adrenaline rush, either from a competitive game where money is on the line, or from something similar, right? Because a lot of the games that I think are going to do really well with the play-to-earn model is games where there's essentially a high competitive edge that where endorphins, you give the endorphin kick of the chance to lose because now there's stakes. There's something on the line. There's something that you could lose in that game. Not everybody wants that, but I think that there is definitely a market for it. And the people who make good games and recognize the fact that that's the lever that they're pulling. They're pulling human motivation, loss of avoidance, and human motivation, randomness, and human motivation, leveling and gaining. So you have several core motivators. Two of which are definitely are high adrenaline ones, losing something. And then sometimes the element of randomness, because You don't know what the outcome is going to be, similar to like a roulette table. And wherever that thing swings, that's when you lose or you gain, and therefore you get this big adrenaline rush from the experience. I think those games that capitalize on that are going to do very, very well, whether it's skill-based, luck-based, whatever it is. I think they'll do very, very well. And I think that there's a particular player group that just doesn't get that from traditional games, which also makes it stand out a lot from traditional games, which I think is also another big area for why make the game an NFT game or a crypto game. Why make it that versus something else? I think that this particular use case that money has is a really good example of why you would go that route.
Yeah, I think you nailed it on the head, and I'll let you talk, Simon. I just wanted to, give him some props because, yeah, you nailed it on the head. That's exactly what I'm trying to communicate. You articulated it very, very well, and I appreciate that because, you know, we could talk about core things all we want, but really, yeah, how do I get to my target demographic? You just articulated it. And I think that it doesn't have to be a gambling game per se, but you have to look at some of your game mechanics and what would make it exciting. Why would somebody who has, you know, $100,000 in crypto or $1,000 in crypto, what would that person want? Why would they want to play that game? And how can we make it better than previous iterations like Axie? And you just spoke all of it very well, and I super appreciate it.
I think we're going to wrap up soon. I think it's getting late for Super Terra, but I wanted to add something like I think would be kind of cool in the future, which may not stick. But I've heard this kind of concept actually before, but I've never actually seen it being done, which is like a skin in the game player versus player mixture of gaming and DeFi. And my thoughts around it, I had a couple of like kind of degen focused maybe protocols around it that were separate to kind of what Super Terra and me were doing, but just kind of like a thought process was what if you could, what if you had a DEX, for example, and you had farming rewards or you had a DeFi product with farming rewards on it, and you reserved like a pool of like a small portion of a daily pool of these farming rewards, which are, you know, won in a game by playing, you know, a small online game that's fun to play. And you're within that game, you know, you can play to win this, you know, sort of portion of farming rewards, but then you could kind of, maybe there was a particular ability to have spikes in this, right? So maybe you could, steal some financial stuff from a competing player, or there's ways in which you could kind of like almost wage war on players around you around that with actual financial skin in the game. I wonder if I've heard about, you know, that.
There is a game that's been this. Yeah. I was in a Twitter space and actually having that conversation with that studio that's doing this. They have an actual game right now. I think you can play it for free and then choose to jump into one of the like competitive arenas. But yeah, basically everybody puts money in the pot and whoever wins gets the money. And then there's another one that has it so that you have NFTs that you're collecting and players, you like go in with a certain number of resources that like cost you real money. And then other players can steal those resources from you throughout the game. So yeah, definitely that's an example of it's not gambling, it's using skill, but it's high risk, high reward skill. And that was kind of like I think that's the lever that those guys were really interested in, is they wanted that adrenaline game that focused on players who like they don't want to just play a game where like it's all hunky dory at the end. Like they want to play a game that's like, you know, the deadliest hunt. Like they want to feel like they bled a little bit at the end of it.
Yeah. What if you could loot or sabotage someone else's farming positions, for example?
Yeah.
Just something very degenerate focused.
Yeah.
It's like high risk, high reward, but you could actually, you get a lot of engagement because you can go into the neighboring person's farms and it's linked into DeFi and you can loot their farm or you can sabotage their farming. Like from a DEX DeFi perspective with real financial skin in the game. It'd be kind of interesting to see that play out.
I think that that could work really well, and I would put that in the mostly play to earn like sector. The reason why I have harped so much on the kind of revamped that play to own is just simply that if there is a like that type of a game caters to those who want that adrenaline rush. If you want a game that doesn't pull the adrenaline lever, doesn't hinge so much on loss and avoidance, but instead pull different. By the way, I'm pulling all this when it comes to human motivation and what levers you're actually pulling. There's an amazing book called Octalysis. It's the Octalysis framework is what I'm talking about. The actual book behind it, I believe, is called Game. I think it might just be called Gamification, but it's by Yukai Chow. Oh, Actionable Gamification. That's what it is. And it's by Yukai Chow. And basically, like, you can map all this stuff onto this framework, decide what levers you're actually pulling, and then make conscious decisions from there about whether or not your game is effective enough. Because it's pretty easy to tell when you put it in that context, like whether or not it's reaching the right people and it's positioned correctly. But anyway, so with play to own, like the idea is that instead of pulling on loss and avoidance so hard, which is what a lot of the play-to-earn games are pulling on. You're instead pulling on, the extrinsic or the intrinsic motivator of, ownership, and really rewarding and validating ownership, which all kinds of people can be attracted to. But in the same token, I think all kinds of people can be attracted to, fear of loss and avoidance and the extrinsic motivator of gaining, right, and leveling. So,
yeah, wow, what a great space it's been. I'm gonna see if Superto's got any last words. I know he's been having some sound issues, so he's mainly been sitting in the background listening. But I'll pass over Superto for any last words, and then any last words from you guys, and we might wrap it up and call it a day for this one.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Yeah, and I had a few technical issues. I think sometimes Twitter does do that to us. I remind people that we are essentially beta testing this this experience, but I'm sure for most people, hopefully the sound quality was decent based on the private conversation I've had with Simon. I think what I've really enjoyed listening, actually, due to the technical issues, is there's a lot of different common themes here around how a successful project builds out, whether it's one that needs that early external capital. I think we talked about early in the space, the fundraising aspects and actually, raise when you can. And also think about that kind of long-term roadmap. And I think it's important as well to think about whether what you're building out is A, sustainable, B, robust enough to survive, the market downturns. And actually, importantly, when you're looking at the different cohorts that you're building for, that, if you're looking to build a game, almost like put those kind of breadcrumbs on the pathway towards the end success, so that you take your community on a journey with you and build out with them. Perhaps the one additional piece that I would add myself, I think it was briefly touched upon, is that ultimately the most successful games, projects, and businesses are the ones that listen to their customer bases, adapt and evolve accordingly. And I think that's actually also part of it as well. I really enjoyed the digression into the kind of the degen path of kind of raiding farming positions and so on as well. But I think at the heart of that, what was really interesting there was the high risk, high reward opportunity. And obviously, the gaming approaches, money shots game, which I think is going to be really, really exciting to see that develop, which offers a high risk, high reward opportunity. And actually, there are ways to do that where it's not overtly gambling, but the elements of the gamification process mean that there's a real massive investment opportunity to get those rewards. I think as well, another aspect that caught my ear, as it were, is that actually a lot of people will grind on games without any expectation of any tangible rewards. Whereas here, we're already offering up something that's additional. But absolutely, and I think this is fundamental to all of this, the game has to have some sort of genuine, deep-seated appeal and genuine value. And I think probably just to wrap up my own thoughts, and again, this was touched upon, you know, we're in the relatively early space stages of developing NFT focused game activity. And actually, it's important that over the next, you know, coming years, months, and what have you, there'll be lots of games will appear. Few will gain that major attraction. But actually, what I always say, and I do encourage, and I think we've touched upon this quite a bit in this space, look at the successes of the past and see how you can effectively adopt some of the best aspects of those. You know, what community aspects work well, what gaming aspects have worked well outside of this space. And then actually ultimately, you know, that kind of conceptual discussion around play to earn versus play to own, which I always think is going to be interesting to see how it plays out. And obviously tokenomics around games and projects. So I think there's lots of different facets to it. And as I say, great frustration on my part that I did have some technical issues, but it's probably one space in six or seven where that happens. But it gave me a chance to, at least in between having to sort of jump out and jump back in, I was able to listen and obviously take in a lot of the content. So thank you to all of our speakers today. I think it's been a really powerful space, and I obviously very closely follow both the projects that have stepped up to join us tonight, and really look forward to seeing how those next phases play out. And I think, as Simon touched upon as well, we've got our own sort of project that we're sort of building behind the scenes that will also, you know, come into this space. It'll be a slightly different approach, but I think perhaps we can look to explore that in more depth on a future spaces to give everyone a sense of that. I think it's something that's quite early stages of development, but one that we're both very excited about. And a bit of a monologue there, but my thoughts on what's been a really interesting space to listen to, and really great that you could all join us as well to listen in the audience. And my very last word, as always, and it's often my first word as well, is as always to say thank you to TerraSpaces for the excellent work they do for promoting the capture of these events and the sharing in the broader community for onward consumption. So thank you again.
Glad to be here. Appreciate you guys hosting this.
Yep, thank and you for everything.
Sorry, and look forward to catching up at DecentralCon for those that are going. I know Rao and Lex can be there. Are you going to be there, Money Shot?
No, I've got a lot of work to do, but I wish. I know this sounds weird, but actually I'm headed to the Bahamas this week. I had it planned a couple years ago, and we finally get to do it. So
amazing. That sounds... Well, enjoy that.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm not at all jealous in a fairly rainy UK at the moment. So no, that's brilliant. Have a fantastic time. Thank you again, particularly as I know I appreciate you're on the road as well. So you've done very well in terms of, you know, great contributions. Really enjoyed the first spaces we did together last week. And I think obviously looking forward to seeing how your financials and everything sort of play out in terms of the next stages of your reveal as well. So lots of exciting things happening there. And thank you, Arel. Really appreciate what you guys are building with Strange Clan. And look forward to further discussions as well with you guys.
Awesome. Really appreciate you guys. And yeah, looking forward to seeing you guys at Decentral Austin.
Cool. Well, alas, I won't be there, but Simon will definitely be representing, but I will be over in, as I say, not so sunny UK, but no, we're supposed to be getting into our summer soon. We'll have 2 days of hot weather and that'll be it for the year. We may have already had those in April, to be fair. But no, in all seriousness, at some point in the future, my intention is to be more visibly able to make it to those sorts of events. So I've set myself a target that hopefully by the back end of this year, I'll be more fully immersed in the space. It's a grand ambition. And obviously, I've had a couple of setbacks, as I think a lot of the people in the Terra community are aware of in the last few weeks. But that's not going to hold me back for long.
Yeah, getting into crypto full time is the key. So for sure.
Cool. Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you, everyone. Yeah, cheers.
Thanks for checking out another episode of The Ether. That was Web 3.0, Gaming and NFT's Future, hosted by SuperTerra. with Money Shots NFTs, recorded on Monday, May 23rd, 2022. For TerraSpaces.org, I'm Finn. Thanks for listening. And if you'd like to keep on listening, head on over to TerraSpaces.org/donate and show us some love. They say rapping is the gateway, bringing home great pay. Checking that replay, sing along and we say nobody gives a fuck around my way. I make about $3 for every 1,000 plays, so add it up and do the math on that. Financially speaking, why the fuck would anybody want to rap? But in this reality, the money comes from doing shows. But then where's the money go when you can't do the shows? I guess you could rap on Cameo. I've been asking all my friends if I can rap on the patio. 6 feet, motherfucker, step the fuck back. Doing a little magic, pulling rabbits out the rucksack. Not everybody's always in it for the money. Looking like another crooked Sunday and I'm working Monday. So you know I ain't stressing, left debating great methods. Amazed to play Inception, the bass stay blessed.
See, even with these huge sums of overall royalties, huge sums of money that go to the record label per playback can seem insultingly small. Many rights holders are making around $0.75 to listen to one of their tracks, leaving only some portion of that for the actual artist.
Can't even say they're making pennies
per play. Until they can figure out how to turn a profit, their future will always be in question. But for now, investors see enough potential to continue to fund pennies per play.
Another day, another lesson. Living in the eighth dimension might be worth a little mention. Living in the Great Depression, got a real regal feel. Reeling in another sucker fish out to make a deal, just to make a motherfucker wish. Aw, shit, now you only got two left. You know what I wish? We didn't have any loose ends. You know what I miss? Listening to excuses. Now we're on the fence like we forgot how to choose. That's what happens when people don't know what's true. In the dark, eating bullshit up like a mushroom. In the lunchroom, just trying to laugh it off. Meanwhile, foaming at the mouth like a rabid dog. Like a fake mating call at the zoo. It's looking like the view is getting disappointing too. I'm working on the new shit, trying to produce it. It's what I'm willing to go through when I'm making my music.